Let's tackle the tough questions, part two.
Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Brandon, what's going on, man?
You always ask me first. I'm asking you, Tyler, what's going on, man?
I always try to beat you to it because then you have to be the one to answer.
I know. So I'm through, and then I try to throw something awkward back at you.
Hey, things are great in my world, man. We're at the tail end of the late season elk hunt with my youngest daughter. And it finally snowed with like just a couple of days left in the season. And I just was out this morning before I came in here. There's elk all over the mountains. And now I've got to work all week. So
just cancel some appointments, you know.
I know.
No, don't cancel them.
I'm hoping the snow stays, and if the snow stays, then the animals will probably stay. And if the animals probably stay, then by this weekend we have a pretty good adventure.
Gosh, how much meat do you need in your freezer? Jeez, Louise! You're a carnivore.
We've used a lot of it.
You make like elk tacos and stuff.
Yeah, we do spaghetti and tacos, and we have a lot of steaks. We had to do some roasts. We do fajitas. But pretty much anything you do with beef, you do with elk.
Ah, now you're making me hungry.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler, let's talk about Radiant Dawn for a second. So, Radiant Dawn, it's a new year. The thing we're kind of turning to now is the Radiant Dawn Conference. It's coming up in April, which seems like a ways away, but it'll be here before we know it.
This is actually the first time that we're mentioning it since we've launched the next dates. And before we even got to talk about it, we've already sold, I think, 3 passes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this will be something that fills up pretty quickly. We always get a lot of really good feedback, life-changing kinds of stuff feedback. It's going to be April 11th through 14th down in Hurricane, Utah. We're actually doing it a little bit later this year than we did last year, just so that we can have a little bit better temperature there. And everything is included, your meals, your place to stay, the actual experiences that we're going to do. And if you are interested, go to radiantdawn.org, radiantdawn.org, and you can kind of take a look at it. There's a whole bunch of information there, and you can make your decisions.
Yeah, and this is something you don't want to like sit around and wait on and think, oh, I should, because we always end up with a wait list. We end up with people that can't come because they were late to the game. So go get on it, radiantdawn.org. We'd love to have you there.
We've been doing this for a few years now, Brandon, and every single year we have a conversation with a handful of women who do come that say, I was kind of on the fence. I don't know if I should come or if I shouldn't come. And without fail, every single person that we talk to is like, I'm so glad I followed through with it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I came.
Yeah. So give yourself this gift this year. Come do some deep healing, some deep inner work with God, and we'd love to have you. All right, Tyler, you ready for the first question?
We're going to continue our questions here, try to get through a few more of our backlog.
Yeah. Okay. So we actually have 2 questions right next to each other here, and because there's 2 questions, I thought I'd just kind of throw this topic out there. So
one of the questions. Together.
Yeah, one of the questions is really short, so I'll read both of them. It says, you talk about bisexual guys married but caught up in sex with men. So that's one of the questions. So I'm going to paraphrase this one. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I thought, oh, it's right here. Sorry, Tyler. So this guy's talking about how, do you have any episodes that specifically address same-sex attraction or homosexuality? I'm 69. and only in the last 5 years have I out loud acknowledged that I am gay, and only to a very small select group. If only I had some teaching and wisdom 50 years ago. I still wrestle with my identity, my value, self-worth, and deep longing to share life intimately with another. But my biblical teaching and beliefs seem to prevent that. Any thoughts? It's kind of a broad topic that I'm throwing out there, Tyler, but one that, you know, we've had a few gay guests on the podcast. So we have talked about this issue. We talk about sex addiction. So we talk about sex a lot. And a lot of times some of the acting out behaviors cross that line with same sex acting out. I don't know, Tyler, what if you have any thoughts?
No, yeah, I can see why you lump them together, but they're kind of two separate questions. So let's start with the first one that you kind of just mentioned. It's a difficult place to be where, like, if I'm understanding this question right, there's a person who's in their own relationship, maybe their marriage or something, with I'm assuming it's a he, maybe not. I don't know if it said that or not. I can't remember.
Yeah, yes.
But
yes, it is.
He's in a relationship with his wife, but he's also attracted not only to females, but to males. And sometimes his acting out has gone over into acting out with other men. For me, like, that's the first question is more like, what is your, he's got to wrestle with what his own value system is around his sexuality while still accepting himself sexually. Mm-hmm. And what that means is he needs to become comfortable with whatever it is that's his sexual template. And then he needs to make choices around how he's going to treat those things on his sexual template based off of his other values that also overlap with it. So yep. if I'm in a relationship with my wife and I have this wide of a sexual template, and I also believe in fidelity in marriage, and she has a sexual template that looks slightly different than mine, it's where we both overlap because we both value fidelity in marriage that we're going to express our sexuality, even though we can both accept that it might be that the spectrum of our sexuality is broader than what we're actually expressing.
That's beautifully said. Go back and listen to what Tyler just said and really understand what he just said, because that's healthy for any relationship, whether it's homosexual, whether it's a heterosexual relationship. And Tyler, you're speaking to here's our favorite word. You're speaking to a dialectic here, where these things can coexist. I can fit my sexuality into certain places that I need to in order to respect my partner, in order to maintain certain values that I want, and I can fully accept all of my sexuality. Both those things can coexist. And I think a lot of times we don't talk about both of them. It goes one way or the other. And I think with homosexuality, if you take it and you look at it and you're like, okay, do you want to have that lifestyle? If that's what you choose, if that's what your truth is, then own that, do that. If you don't want that lifestyle, if you're married and you've committed to fidelity in a certain way, but you have on your arousal template these other things, can you be honest about your sexuality, be open about who you are, but also keep in the boundaries of what you're committed to in that relationship? Is that possible for you? And can you be fully happy? Can you be fully you in that relationship if you choose that, right? Then that's, yeah.
I think that's the personal wrestle. So kind of going into the second question that you mentioned, Brannon, what I love about what I heard inside the question is that it sounds like he was kind of coming to this place of finally going, I'm not going to choose to not feel certain things, right? Like I'm going to naturally feel some things. And he's finally in a spot where he's saying, hey, look, like I'm going to stop fighting that I have these feelings. I'm going to actually accept that I have these feelings. I'm going to accept that I have these tendencies. I'm going to accept now I get to wrestle with what do I want to do with them, right? So right. Now I get to, so the key here is that we still get to access and use our choice based off of the reality of our situation rather than trying to deny the reality of our situation.
Right.
And there might still be a real wrestle there, and that's
right.
That's okay.
Right.
It's at least in line with what's real and what's the truth rather than some place of denial. If we're going to wrestle, right. We might as well wrestle in the space of the truth rather than wrestling, trying to live a lie.
Absolutely. And actually there's an awesome opportunity for growth and connection in that together. As you're honest about who you are as a sexual being. All right, Tyler. So here's some this is like advanced sex addiction. You'll understand this, but I want to really make sure our audience understands this. So when we talk about homosexuality, it used to be in the DSM that it was a disorder. It used to be. It's not any longer. And the reason I bring that up is homosexuality or anything on your arousal template could be an opportunity for some understanding of self and some trauma work. Okay. So I'm not saying homosexuality is a disorder and it's you know automatically bad. What I'm saying is anything on your arousal template, anything, usually is an opportunity to get you to know yourself better. A lot of times the things on our arousal template are there because of our trauma. And we've sexualized those feelings of shame and breakdown in attachment and we've sexualized those things, which then gives us opportunity to come back and say, oh, why is that on my arousal template? The arousal template is kind of a window to the soul through the trauma. Did I explain that well, Tyler?
I think so, Brandon. Basically what you're saying, and this isn't, the question was about homosexuality, but you're talking about anything on the sexual template. I'm thinking about the way that you and I were exposed to pornography affected my sexual template.
Absolutely.
Right. It did. There was no way it couldn't affect my sexual template. Right. And what you're saying is that I go back now and I take a look and say, okay, well, why is my sexual template it includes this thing. And I actually track that back to the way that I was exposed to pornography. Now I'm actually, if I then pull the sex off, what's there? What's underneath it?
Right.
Emotional needs, personality type stuff, getting to know myself better, understanding the things that happened to me a little differently, maybe with an adult set of eyes going like, oh, wow, of course that would have affected me that way. Like,
right.
Now there's the opportunity for more self-awareness, more self-compassion and self-love, and also potential additional learning and I believe more empowerment healing. of choice.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I look at you could look at arousal template, whether it's homosexuality or whatever, and you could say, okay, like what kind of father wounds are connected to this thing on my arousal template? I think of a client of mine years ago who on his arousal template was all about force and control and domination. And what do you know, when he was really, really young, at school, he was bullied like intensely and forced to do things. And so he's overcompensated with his sexuality of fantasizing about doing this thing, right? And not everything on our arousal template comes from our trauma. So a lot of it is just innately in us. It's just automatic. It's just there. Our arousal template is both in us from our experiences and from who we are. And so it's both of those things, but it's an opportunity, whether it's, so when we talk about homosexuality, it gets judged so much and looked down upon as a sin so much that somebody has a hard time stopping and saying, I want to look at this thing. Like, what does it say about me? Who am I? And I want to understand this better. And And I'm so scared of it. I've been, I mean, this guy that asked this question, I've been hiding it for so, so long that I'm just scared of it. I'm scared to even barely acknowledge it. You know, then there's probably a lot more work to do to go dig into that, to see what's actually going on.
Yeah. And I think that's where the stumbling block is for so many people that we work with, Brannon. And everyone's different. Everyone's different on their journey, understanding things. But I think it's okay to see it as a journey. Let me just give an example of what you're saying here. In the past, I had a client. He had come in. By the time he met with me, he had already been married. He was heterosexual, but the way that he acted out was with gay pornography. And he was befuddled by the fact, he's like, I don't think I'm gay, but I would rather watch gay pornography than like heterosexual pornography. But I also love my wife, and she totally does it for me too. Like, I can't figure this out. He was in tears shaking when he told me that. Like, it was like the first time he'd ever told anybody that's the nature of how his acting out had worked.
Because the shame around the gay part of it is so intense. It's hard to say that out loud.
Because he couldn't say it out loud, he then stayed in denial for years until he finally said it out loud. And then he had a safe place to go, I want to understand this. Like, and what it ended up being is it started off with something completely non-sexual. He was the youngest of four brothers. He was introduced and it was a really big priority in their home to be really athletic, to be strong. His older brothers were into bodybuilding and lifting weights and everything else. And he always felt like he was the youngest brother that never quite measured up, that never quite could meet up to what his brothers were. And so by the time he was exposed to pornography, he was more drawn to trying to understand the masculine side of that pornography from the male character than he was from the female character. And then over time, it just morphed into, and what he realized is that he was chasing an understanding of masculinity in all the wrong places more than he was even chasing something sexual.
Right.
And for him to be able to go, okay, I can accept that I have these things. I can speak it out loud. I can now look at it. I can get curious. He walks away with so much more understanding of himself as a person, and also of his actual wounds, that he's got to go back now and get, there's nothing sexual there. He gets to do the work on the wounds that he found that are like, wow, there's my masculine wounds.
Right. Right. But he had to acknowledge it and accept that it was there in order to say it out loud, in order to process it, in order to talk about it.
Yep.
And it's if you can't go there, if the shame is just preventing that, then it actually has more control in creating compulsive behavior, because it's underground and that energy is still there, versus acknowledging it, processing it, understanding it, and then choosing what you want to do with it, whatever that may be. So,
yeah.
All right, Tyler.
Couple questions.
Yeah, it's a good one. You got another one?
Yeah, here's another one. This one says, this is from a woman, and she says, trust and pain are the two biggest things I struggle with post-betrayal. It has been 2 years since my husband told me he'd been having an affair with a coworker. The pain he caused me holds me back from fully investing in our marriage. I don't feel like he understands the permanent damage that has been done to our children, our marriage, and myself from his actions. I try to validate my own pain, but it's not enough. I was encouraged to stop bringing up my triggers because of his patterns of shutting down. When the affair is not brought up, we thrive. He is a better version of himself since the affair, but the version still does not meet my expectations. I find myself angry at everything but him. It brings up all the thoughts, and I become distrustful of myself and his journey. I feel like I'm almost waiting for him to mess up so I can be free. Basically, what do I do?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, as you're reading that, Tyler, it's kind of the classic, I want you close, but not too close scenario that we see a lot of times with the healing process with betrayal, where a partner can get stuck in this space of I think you're healing, and I appreciate that, but I don't want to get hurt again. And so I'm also picking up on there's some work for her to do to go through the grieving process. Maybe she needs to feel some anger, some sadness, to go through the grieving process still around what happened. So what do you pick up on, Tyler?
I hear the same things. I mean, she's, what I would say is that if you find yourself angry about everything, that's actually not bad. It's probably par for the course, especially because it sounds like she's been working really hard to be, she wants things to go right, and she's trying to help things go right. And one of the places where she's trying to help things go right is by stuffing her own emotions. And part of the reason she's stuffing her own emotions is because he shuts down if she's too emotional about the things going on, right? So naturally, anger is going to build because anger is there to kind of be the voice when it feels like something needs to be voiced and it's not being. So I hear the grieving for sure, but I also think that there's different ways to still work through your emotions and your triggers without stuffing them. And I also think that the marriage itself likely needs some work, because if he shuts down with any type of strong emotion, that's going to be a wall in your relationship moving forward no matter what. And one of the ways he gets to practice is that you learn to how to appropriately bring up yourself in your own feelings and give him a chance to learn how to hear and hold those things.
So Tyler, stuffing her emotions is actually caretaking for him.
Yeah. Well, she's yeah, caretaking for him, but she's paying the price because it's stuffing her up emotionally.
But she might be doing it because she doesn't want the consequence of him shutting down. So she might be doing it for herself, but she's caretaking for him as well. So stuffing those emotions in the short run seems like it's keeping the peace. But in the long run of that relationship, it's destroying her and destroying the relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting because she said, when the affair is not brought up, we thrive. I'm not sure thriving is anywhere associated with the rest of this question.
Is the word, right? When the affair is brought up, we don't have conflict.
We get along, and then I just go on and cash my checks emotionally through anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get what she's saying. Basically, he's moving on. He's getting better in terms of his recovery than where they were. She sees that. If I don't bring it up and have him feel his own shame and pain again, then we do pretty well with each other. But that then leaves me trying to figure out how to manage all this emotion if I don't have a place to bring it up with him.
So what do you suggest, Tyler?
Well,
if you were to just kind of bluntly say it, and you know, you don't have to like dance around this and build rapport with her in a therapy session, all this stuff. If you were to just say, this is what, you know, would be helpful for her, what would it?
If I was talking to her and I could be just straightforward, I would say she needs, and she probably already has this, she needs a team to be able to continue to let her emotions flow. She needs practice then having the team coach her back into her marriage and take her feelings in a non-dramatic way to her husband so that he can learn how to be more present. Sounds like he's trying to work recovery. Give him a chance to step into the emotional work. And in the meantime, give yourself permission to be open to the grieving process. There's going to be anger, devastation, sadness, and all of that's a normal part of the experience.
When we talk about boundaries, people just think boundaries are so two-dimensional, and they're much more complex and more internal than anything. So when you go and you're honest about your emotions and you express them and you feel them in your relationship, and if he shuts down, this is where your boundary comes into play. Of him shutting down is about him. It's like he's still him. A boundary is knowing where he stops and you begin. So when he shuts down, that's about him. You don't need to take it personal. You were just honest with you about your, and this is where that chaos kind of, you know, craziness is going to happen in the relationship that you're trying to avoid. But it's better to figure out how to step into it and navigate this than it is to just avoid it. And the same goes for his side of the fence. Your emotions and your pain are a great opportunity for him to really rebuild trust with you. And you're not giving him that opportunity by caretaking for him because you don't trust that he's strong enough to actually do that work with you. So your option, because you are in charge of your side of the fence, is to actually step in and give him that opportunity. And at first he's going to suck at it. Like, he's going to really struggle to know what to do with that.
But that's how he'll learn.
That's how he'll learn. And if you're both committed to this process, then you'll do this together and you'll get better at it. And you'll reap huge benefits.
Yeah. Yep.
We make it sound so easy, Tyler.
I know. It's always easier when you're not talking to a real person too.
Yeah. Just go ahead and do that. Yeah.
Just do that. You'll be all better. Yeah.
No.
It's hard.
You're gonna struggle. It's gonna be hard. You're gonna go back to your old protective ways of keeping the peace and quotation marks, thriving. You know, so do the fall back into those patterns, but recognize that and then commit to step back into real recovery.
Yeah.
So, all right, Tyler. I got another one for you here. Let me pull it up. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. It's right here. It says, I was raised by parents and religion to not to place value on physical attractiveness of a man, but instead look at character, religious faithfulness, and work ethic. The messaging, it's shallow to focus on the physical, and it doesn't matter for me, and she puts in parentheses, for women, anyways, since we aren't sexual. However, you need to be attractive to men, and which she says, which I was and I am. I married a man who I wasn't totally physically attracted to, but thought had great character and faithfulness to God. Over 13 years of marriage, I have realized that he cares more about looking good than what is right and or true. While he works hard at his career, the character, avoiding lying, gaslighting, about compulsive porn use or anything that shows him in a negative light. And religion, faith, he cares mainly about how he looks. And so pieces are not there for me. I'm left with almost zero attraction to him and an acceptance of my desire sexuality that has me torn. Would leave promptly if not for my 3 kids.
That's hard.
What do you hear there? Yeah.
It's a tough situation. You know, I look at that. We could talk about physical attraction. I think all of us would agree that we want the physical attraction is a component of at least building, getting into and building a relationship. And so
she
maybe
was told it's not.
Yeah.
She, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but now she's kind of growing into her own self and saying, I do have desires, you know, sexually, and she's growing into her own sexuality a little bit more than where she started from. And mm-hmm. That's causing some of the struggle in her situation, because, you know, there's turmoil because she's got this life that she's built. She's got a 13-year marriage. Sounds like they at least have some type of a image or reputation to keep in their social circles, in their religion. At least he does. What I'm hearing, though, is that there's still a lot of behaviors that aren't necessarily aligning themselves with something that would be considered like a recovery lifestyle. If there's avoiding and lying and gaslighting and compulsive porn use, and it's still happening, those things are going to prevent any type of deeper connection and intimacy anyway.
My guess, Tyler, is, and I don't know for sure, but my guess is if he actually showed up with some real healthy masculinity, strength, integrity, sitting in truth, that, and this sounds weird, but my guess is that he would get more physically attractive to her.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, actually physically attractive to her. Now, maybe not, because I'm kind of hearing her say, like, look, I settled when it comes to my sexuality. I threw my sexuality out the window, physical attractiveness, all that stuff. Like I said, it doesn't matter to me at all because I wanted a man of integrity. And now I don't even have a man of integrity. So I'm not physically attracted to him. And I don't have that strength when it comes to his honesty and integrity and masculinity in our relationship. Basically, I have none of it. And so, I guess her ultimate question is, what do I do? She has three kids, or she would leave. What do
I
you
think
think?
to your point, Brandon, like before we get to any more advice, I'm thinking of have you either read the books or watched the movie Nanny McPhee? Yeah. And systematically throughout the movie, Nanny McPhee, she comes in and she's got kind of all of these sort of like physical blemishes. And then systematically throughout the movie, as the kids get to know her and as she teaches them certain lessons, then she loses some of these blemishes along the way. There's actually some research that's been found to be true, something called the habituation effect, which is that couples who actually are in like connected, committed relationships over time, they do actually become more attracted to each other. So that's why you can have like a 60-year-old man look at his wife and be like, man, she is so beautiful and so gorgeous. And she's in there inside of herself going like, man, I don't look like I used to. But he's like, man, she's amazing. Like she's beautiful. It's because of all those other factors that safety and trust and other forms of intimacy and shared experience, when those all come together, it does actually affect the physical attractiveness of the people around us. So there's probably some level of truth to what you were saying there, Brandon. I almost wonder if this question has a little bit of the cart being put before the horse right now because of those factors. You know, I don't know that you want to go work on your physical attraction and your sexual intimacy unless you're nailing down the lying, the gaslighting, the compulsive porn use, any of that other stuff. And the bigger issue here is his ego. Like he's still so into manipulating how people see him that you're not going to be able to get the real him anyway. And until he can just own that and be like, hey, yeah, this is me.
So I kind of hear, just to put this bluntly, like I hear, I settled when I got married. He's not giving me anything of what I actually married him for. Why am I in this relationship? And to come back to what you were just saying, Tyler, I think that's fair. I think it's fair for you to say, you know what? At least provide the things that I did marry you for. And then let's see where the physical attraction goes from there. But if he doesn't, if his ego gets in the way, if all these protective parts are there, and that doesn't change, then what?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the right direction. Yeah, I think that's the right direction. And then at that point, then you start to look at these things that she's saying at the end of her question and saying, you know what? The fact that she's here at the bottom of her question saying, if I didn't have our three sweet kids, I'd already be gone. She already knows that there's a whole uphill battle to climb here. And I would be asking her if she was like my client, I would be asking her what trajectory she sees her partner on in addressing all of these other things. Because if the trajectory is still down and it's still about self-image management and all of those other things, then I'd be asking some questions about what's best for the three sweet kids.
Yeah, what's actually best for them?
Yeah.
Tyler, I want to, get your opinion on this because it has to do with this question. I was talking to someone recently, just a middle-aged woman, just wanting to get the most out of life, who got in a marriage where she's not sexually attracted to her husband at all. And she's to the point in her life where, you know, she's, you know, mid 30s ish, looking at life. And she said this to me. She said, now there's issues in the relationship. There's all kinds of issues. But she said, one of the big reasons why I don't know if I want to stay married is because I want to actually have a good sex life. And then she quickly said, that is so selfish and so horrible of me to say. Like, I thinking about leaving my husband for that reason is so horrible. Like, I should not think that. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, you just used the famous word should, you know.
Right, right. Don't put it on yourself.
Anytime you hear the word should, it's time to pause and actually ask some questions and then retie to what is and get back to the reality of your values.
I think in this question, she illustrates that it's easy for a woman to discount their sexuality, to say that is easy to throw by the wayside and not look at it as something that's important for me to fully develop in my life. I can sacrifice that one. Easy. No problem.
Yeah. Well, right. And when you look at that question from that context, everything I just said takes on a new meaning then, because maybe that's the place she's at in her own recovery where she's trying to value that part of herself more.
Right. Right. I'm kind of picking up on that in the question a little bit.
Yeah. And if that's the case, then yeah, she's got a good question. Like, how does she value her own? How does she look at her current values of who she is? She's adding in this new piece of like, and I'm okay to actually take a look at the fact that I'm a sexual being too, with my own drives and desires.
Is that, Tyler, just of God, or is that of Satan? Is that just selfish?
Well, it sounds
to go down that road for her, or is that?
No, it actually sounds, I mean, from my perspective and my opinion is that if we're looking at it from that context, she's actually making progress.
Yeah, which means that maybe some truth and God is pushing her into looking at this and saying this is important. I was lied to about my sexuality and how unimportant that was, right?
Yeah, and that's got to have its own emotional process for her to say, wow, now that I'm seeing that and having to wrestle with that and maybe look at making some changes as to how I treat myself, even my physical part. I think this is something too, like, I would agree, like, if a long-term relationship, there's lots of long-term relationships that can grow into the attraction because the other bones are good, but attraction still matters.
Yes.
Like people don't get together without some form of attraction. And when we disregard that completely, I think we're actually like, we're dismissing something that's actually really important
to the human experience.
Yeah.
And it's not just about selfishness and being shallow and all those things. It's a reality of our existence, and it's important.
Yeah. I think when it's only attraction, then it very quickly can become shallow, but attraction is actually really important.
A part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a part of it. And just the way she wrote that of her culture, her religion, her basically snuffing that out and saying, don't worry about that. You don't worry about it. That's not important. Like, I think that is that is at this point in your life, it's something to actually question and maybe not soak in like you used to. And then look at the issue now is now you're in the situation that you're in. You have three children and a husband. And so to be able to say, okay, I'm here. Can I truly live a life where I feel fulfilled, by making this work with my husband? Maybe, maybe not. And you know, it's better to drink that bitter cup and move forward than it is to drag on. And it's exactly what you said, Tyler, what is best for those three sweet children, right? Parents who don't love each other and a mom who's resentful that she's in the relationship for the rest of her life and totally unfulfilled versus a mom and a dad who are living their truth and facing the hard consequences of what that truth is.
Yep.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, question.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Do you want to do one more?
Yeah, this is fun. Let's do one more.
Okay. All right. This one is from someone named Kim. Says, I have never heard anyone talk about the addict who doesn't feel any guilt or shame around watching porn. The ones that thought of it as just something they did by themselves, and if I were to walk in and figured I'd probably be mad and he'd deal with it then. He went from watching for hours on end daily to what he did before he fell asleep. He was raised by a man that introduced him to stripper parties at 13 and had girls gone wild playing on their TV often. He was encouraged to have girls sleep over and pointed out every female his dad had a sexual thought about and what he would do. He hasn't watched in almost 4 years and claims to hate everything about it, yet recently said he doesn't think it's bad. He avoided images but got a Facebook account for business and deleted it after a few weeks because he was enjoying the what she called the thirst traps flooding his feed and told me it's still appealing. What about the addicts who use isn't shame-based? Whose use isn't shame-based? So basically, if we were to break this question down really, really just simply, my partner doesn't feel guilty about watching porn and doesn't think it's bad. What do I do?
It's an interesting situation that she outlined. He doesn't think it's bad, yet it says for 4 years he hasn't looked at it.
And claims to hate everything about it.
So, like, in some way, I feel like he's got some pretty good motivation and intention to not look at it. You know, like, okay, it might not be a moral motivation in order to avoid it, but maybe he's looking at this and saying, what do I want in my life? Like, what consequences do I want or not want? He claims to hate everything about it, but he doesn't think that it's bad to look at it.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying, Tyler? Like, he's not being guilt tripped and forced into not looking at it. He's choosing to not look at it because it doesn't serve his life and what's good for him. In a way, I think that's a better motivation than shame and guilt. What do you think?
Well, if I'm hearing you, you're saying that if he's not looking at it, he at least has an understanding of his reasons for not looking at it.
Well, there's one of two reasons. Either he's just doing it for her, and he like resents her and thinks this is stupid, but I won't look at it for you. So either it's that, or it's, I don't feel like it's bad. I don't feel like God's coming down on me, but I don't like wasting that much time in my life. I don't like it objectifying women. So I mean, maybe he's not going as far to say it's bad, like it's moralistically bad, but he is saying it's bad for my life.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah,
maybe it's a semantics game about it being bad. You know, maybe part of what's happening here is, you know, if we were to go all the way back to like mindfulness basics, nothing in mindfulness is good or bad because you remove judgment in mindfulness. And the reason
same
for
with,
that is
same with parts work.
Yeah. And so the reason for that is that if you remove the judgment, it means you have to take ownership for why you think the things you do or feel the way you feel about the things going on in your life. So
yes. If
he's approaching it from that perspective, he's now saying, I'm not going to label it as bad or evil because I have to take ownership for the fact that I choose not to watch it because it affects my marriage. It affects my concentration. It affects my feelings about myself.
He's taking accountability.
Yeah. If he's doing it that way, then that would be like, that would be a healthy way, but it's just semantics at that point. He's not doing it because it's bad for his life. And she's saying, well, why doesn't he just say it's all bad? Right.
Right.
I hear denial inside of this question too. Like, I hate everything about it, yet. Well, you should own why you hate it then. Right.
Right. I think God comes into this of like, am I sinning? Is this like, so sure, I hate everything about it. You can label it as bad. You can say it's bad, but I don't think he should go to her and say, yeah, I think it's bad and I'm a sinner just because she thinks that, because she needs him to hear that from him. I think he should be honest. And so I don't, I'm not saying he is being completely honest, but either he's in denial. His gut is telling him and his higher power is telling him this is bad, and he's defensive and he's saying, it's not bad. I'm not a sinner. I'm not bad. Don't look at me that way. So either that's denial, or it's the opposite. Right?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
I'm being honest with you about how I feel.
Well, and I think if you look at the backstory she gives in the question here, there's a lot of backstory where there needs to be room for some self-compassion for how he was socialized into it.
Right.
You know, like, and maybe that's why he's having a hard time saying it's bad, because he's like, hey, this is what I did growing up. Like, this was, this was life.
If you apply parts work, or like you say, mindfulness, like parts work would say, wow, this firefighter part, protective part inside of me actually found a way to cope with my tumultuous childhood. And so I'm grateful for that part that found this way of compulsively acting out, because it took care of me in those instances. Now, I don't want that in my life anymore. So I'm not going to look at it as bad, as like a horrible, awful demon inside of me. I'm going to look at it as this thing that worked for that moment, but I don't want it anymore, because I don't want the consequences of it anymore in my life.
Yeah. Right? Even though there's a part of me that's still drawn to it.
Yeah. And so that you can hear the self-compassion in dealing with it versus the model of self-rejection, which is, you should think this is bad, so you shouldn't do it, and you should acknowledge how horrible you are for doing it. Like, if that validates her feelings, that's one thing. Now, I don't know where this guy's heart is. I don't know either. But you know what, Tyler? You and I could quickly pick up on, what's this? Is this guy like just a tool who's manipulating, or is this guy like a genuine dude who's just being honest?
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah, you don't know it from a question written like this. I think to add the other side of the coin to what you were just saying there, Brannon, I think sometimes we like err on the side of, hey, let's meet this with compassion and understanding, and let's not judge it and all of that stuff. But there's another side of the coin, which is that if she's in this boat too, I don't think she's necessarily wrong, is that she can look at the pornography industry and think it's evil.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean she's calling him evil, and it doesn't mean he should judge himself that way or feel judged or feel put down by that. He still has to work on being shame resilient. And, you know,
again, I
know where I stand on it. I do think the pornography is evil. You know, I joke with my clients all the time that the only thing more evil than the pornography industry is the alcohol industry. And the alcohol industry just gets to do more damage because it's more socially acceptable. Now, when I say that, there's gonna be a lot of people that take exception with that, because, well, now you're telling me I should stifle my sexuality, and I actually like having a glass of wine at night, this and that and the other. Like, no. What it boils down to on both sides of the coin eventually is, I need to be able to make a decision about what's most effective for my life with my values.
Yeah.
And so the labels that we put on there just take us away from the truth that I have to now go back and say, here's why I think the pornography industry is evil. I'm going to own my experience with why I believe that, or the alcohol industry is evil. I'll own my experience with it, and then I'll make my choices accordingly.
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. And you can label it evil or not or whatever. I think what you need to be careful of is, I need to label this part of me or this thing as evil in order to force and control behavior into my life.
That's where it's wrong.
Yeah, because it perpetuates those behaviors. It creates covertness, it creates shame, it creates like a lot of the things still happening, because you're trying to force yourself by saying, I don't want to be evil, and I've labeled that thing as evil, so therefore I'm not going to do that thing. And then it doesn't work to actually create the outcomes that you want in your life.
Right.
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 So, Tyler, we could go on and on. These are great questions that we get, aren't they?
Yeah, they're tough.
Complex. Everyone's situation is a little bit different. I just, you know, as we've gone through these, Tyler, I just feel a ton of empathy for people's pain, and just love for people out there doing the best that they can. Most people are just doing the best they can with what they've got. And man, like life is tricky. Life is hard. Life is painful at times. And as long as you're willing to just face it, move forward and grow, learn and grow, then you can get through this life. When you're fighting it, when you're needing certain outcomes, when you're fighting against it, and then it can really take you out. So,
yeah, it's a constant process. This is kind of a random story, but just a couple of days ago, I had this experience where I was in the grocery store. I paid at the grocery store. I'm walking out, and I don't know if you've ever had this, Brannon, but have you ever had like just moments where you feel like so deeply connected just to humanity in general? Like,
dude, that happened to me in Costco. What is it with the, maybe it's food, I don't know,
maybe, but
I
was like, maybe it's the grocery
just like
store.
Loving on all my fellow shoppers.
I'm literally like looking into the eyes of every person I pass, and I don't know, like it doesn't happen very often, but every single person I looked into their eyes, I was just like, I didn't say it out loud, but I was just like, I love you. Like, and I could like feel it.
Soul.
I could just feel like all this depth of love for them, you know? And I walk out and I'm like, man, how is it possible that I could feel so much love for total strangers? And then I get in my car and I go to leave, and I find myself flipping off the next guy in front of me because he won't go. And I'm like, what just happened? Like, I was in this place of complete, total love, like just living in this love. And literally 30 seconds later, I've lost it completely.
Yeah, your humanity came back.
And it's like, this is the work we have in front of us. Like,
yes,
it's constant work to bring ourselves back to that place of love, to that place of groundedness, to the place of our values.
Forgiveness.
And we live in a world that's trying to pull us away from that. And too many of us live in those other places way more than in the space of love, which is what we're trying to cultivate.
Yep. Yep. Amen. Amen. Yeah. I'm joining the religion of Tyler, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a tough process, man. But I love those moments when you finally feel just complete love.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish it came more for me, because I have felt exactly what you're talking about. And we might be sounding really weird right now. I get it. But like, I need to nurture that more. I need to find that more with people around me. So, all right, you guys, if this was helpful to you, if you have more questions, Tyler, where do they go to submit questions?
Go to therapybros.com, therapybros.com, and hit ask a question. You're way more likely to get your question answered if you, after you hit ask a question, it'll invite you to either write a question or come on the show. Come on the show, you'll get your question answered a lot faster than this list that Brannon and I are trying to get
through. Depth. Yep, in much more depth too. So, all right, you guys, have a good one. We'll see you later.